My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the final Eastern Daily Press Formula One podcast of the season. A sort of a season review, if you will, or a muddle through what was the 2013 campaign. Joining me for this, I have Kyle Cumbers. Hello, Kyle.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. You good?
I'm very well. Yeah. Very well.
Good to see you. We are down at the Rose again, obviously. No scampi fries on the table.
I'm very upset by this. I've heard the rumour of the scampi fries. I've heard the talk. I've heard the chat. I've not had it backed up as yet.
No. Well, we'll have maybe a celebratory bag at the end. Possibly. that was Perry Hamilton. Hello.
Hello, Michael. So apologies for missing the last pod. I have to apologise to the avid fans who obviously download the podcast just for my dulcet tones. Yeah.
And they tweet you all the time.
Outlandish.
As well.
I've never been tweeted. Listeners, never been tweeted. I've given my Twitter address every time. Tweet me. Anything. Abuse. I don't care.
On the abuse.
Just tweet me so that it hasn't been a complete waste of my time. But thanks, Michael. It's lovely to be here.
It's good to have you. Good to have you. And we have a newbie on the podcast. Steve Rust's here. Hello, Steve.
Yes, hello. How are we?
Yeah, we are well. Are you well?
Yeah. A bit cold after biking here, but I'm all right.
Good man for biking. Yeah.
See, you need some hot scampi fries to warm up. Michael, you've dropped the ball.
Hot scampi fries. That'd be awesome.
The air gun of scampi fries is jammed on the front right wheel here. That's you. That's on you. That 5 second pit stop, that's on you right
now. That's right. They'll move me onto the rear right. It'll be fine. Steve, great for you to come and join us. Appreciate that. Ducked in at the end, which is always good. I hope you'll be around next year as well.
Definitely.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. I just thought I'd do that on air so that we can get a binding contract in front of all the listeners. Right then, should we get stuck into this then? The 2013 season, how is it going to be remembered, guys? Is it really going to be the dull fest that we all sat through? Or were there little gems?
I think there were little gems. I don't think there were as many little gems as there were the previous season. Because when I think back and I go, what were my highlights? And I keep thinking of some things and I go, no, that was the season before. No, that was the season before as well. So it's all going a little crazy. But I think there were some nice highlights as well. If you want to get right into the meat and potatoes, as you will, I think for me this whole season is summed up by one phrase.
Which will be?
Multi-21. I think this whole season can be summed up by that phrase, because to me, I think that was a turning point of sorts, and that was very, very near the beginning. It was like our second race or something.
Well, Malaysia as a race was probably the race of the year.
Agreed.
Would we all agree with that already?
Definitely.
Yeah. Not only, probably not for the on-track action, but just the team radios, the podium, Mark Webber being quite honest.
Rosberg obviously getting annoyed about being behind Lewis.
But I think that set the tone for the tyre usage as well, because it was from then on that we fully understood how much these cars would have to manage their situation. And it wasn't just about going hell for leather, it wasn't about going, you know, full speed and burnout. It was, you've got to manage everything from here on in. So when we saw people like Lewis going slowly, instead of thinking, has he got a problem, is he this, is he that, he's doing what he's been told to do, and you could see the frustration for the drivers.
I suppose it just summed up the domination of Red Bull and Sebastian Vettel in the end, didn't it? It did.
I think the only excitement for me in the season was the start, really, because with the start, I don't think Red Bull had the dominance that they had at the end. I think the tyres changing halfway through the season, I think, benefited them more than anyone. I think if that hadn't have happened, would have been probably more exciting. And I think probably Alonso would have been closer to them, but we still would have got the same result. But I think probably for me, the first half was more exciting, you know, because you had, you know, Mercedes would be able to take it to Red Bull on Saturdays. But, you know, it didn't take too many races to realise that they couldn't look after their tyres and it was going to be inevitable they would fall back and we would have the usual suspects finish on the podium or front row, albeit. So, yeah, I think for me, highlight was probably really the start of the season.
So does that mean that changing the tyres was probably the low light of the season? Because it's an interesting point. We had all that noise that predominantly came from Red Bull until, there was obviously Silverstone, which was ridiculous, but arguably once the tyres changed, Red Bull were untouchable, almost a direct correlation.
I'm trying to. This was before the Hungaroring.
Yeah, we had Silverstone when we had all the blowouts.
Yeah.
Germany, they changed them slightly, and then I think from Hungary, it was the new compact, or the old compact back.
Yeah, so Hamilton won that race, and every race since, from that race.
Second half of the season.
Best of ones, yeah. You could say it's quite a big...
And they were the ones who were being noisiest about it at the time as well, weren't they? I start getting angry about this, because you know, have Red Bull pulled one here?
I don't think they pulled one. I think they knew what was best for them, and they went out and they. I think they got a huge assist from Silverstone. I think because they'd been making noise about the tyres way before that, and then I think when you have, I mean, Silverstone, it may have just been several unlucky coincidences in one race. You know, if the tyres stood up normally, but this happened in a normal season, I don't think anyone would have really said anything. Oh, it's a bit unlucky, isn't it crazy? But because Red Bull were making the noise and then this happened and, you know, three or four blowouts, it's dangerous. And that's, unfortunately, that's the killer, because when you have talk of, you know, drivers should boycott racing. No, drivers should never boycott racing, you know, apart from, unless you're Kimi Raikkonen and you're not getting paid. That's a different story. But you should never boycott racing. The only reason you would consider doing that is if you feel your health is in danger. Admittedly, I seem to recall that Mark Webber was the voice leading that charge. Again, so it falls on Red Bull. So it does seem to always come back to that, and their run of form, once the tyres change, it does kind of point the finger. I don't think they've pulled one, because I think the change had to be made, but I think Silverstone really helped that happen, unfortunately.
Silverstone was a bizarre race. I remember seeing in the press room for that one, it was just
name dropping, isn't it?
Yeah.
Name dropping.
It was the one I went to.
He was there, wasn't
I have to make the most of the one I went to, but it was pretty surreal seeing these tyres blow up. I mean, it was. We hadn't really ever seen anything like that. They were just going up one by one.
Yeah, and there was talk of red flag in the race, halfway through, cancel it. And that's probably was my second favourite race after Malaysia, just for the.
For the sheer action.
Yeah.
So who says the fans don't love tyre blowouts? All right then, shall we sort of run through the performers? I said what we did last year, we gave three-word verdicts. So I don't know if any of you have thought of any three-word verdicts of teams or drivers. I'm accusing myself of this as well, because I haven't particularly. But we might as well start at the top. Red Bull, pure dominance. Sebastian Vettel, a racing legend.
Damn you, Nui.
Love it. Love it.
Snore, snore, snore.
Yeah.
And just so predictable, you know, just it would get out in front and it was, you know, you say Schumacher's second coming, maybe. The maybe's an extra, it doesn't count as the three words, no, that would make it four words. So yeah. It's Schumacher's second coming, and then I'm saying maybe to you, so you know then.
Yes, I see.
Okay.
Excellent.
And nice one, Mark. You know, shame to see him go. Good run in F1. And I mean, him and Alonso are that sort of rare breed now. That you're not going to get going forward. It's just not going to happen, because now people come in with so much money behind them. Him and Alonso were sort of the last two of the guys that got in on merit, on ability, on sheer ability of how to race, and started at the back of the grid. I mean, they started at Minardi, and I remember back in the day, Minardi was a joke, along with Arrows. Were, you know, they were the Caterhams and Marussias of the day, and now you're looking at Mark Webber in a championship-winning team, and you're looking at Fernando Alonso in Ferrari, you know, the most storied franchise is my American sports background coming out there. But, you know, the most storied team and long-lasting team there. You know, these guys, you're not going to see them anymore. You're going to see the young 19-year-old Russians with a huge amount of backing, Sorokin. But that's what you're going to see going forward. And I think it's a real shame to lose Mark Webber from the sport. But by his own admission, it didn't sound like anything that he loved anymore. So it sounded like there were more negatives than positives. And you've got to walk away when that's the case.
We'll all miss Mark. Mercedes, then second in the championship. Good stuff. And probably the best, most competitive driver lineup of all the sort of higher teams.
Quite possibly,
And they'll be settled for next year. Well, you know, it's all teed up nicely, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, for my three-word thing, the only thing I could think of was good effort, Hamilton. You know, I mean, first season, new team. I mean, first time, really, he switched teams in Formula 1. I think to go under a car that would have been designed for Schumacher and Rosberg and not himself, I think it was a good effort, you know. He outscored his teammate fairly comfortably. You know, I mean, he admitted halfway through the season he was struggling to set up a car, he was struggling to slow it down under braking. you know, I think it was a good effort considering all of the tyre failures, you know, and everything. So yeah, I think good effort from him and Mercedes as well. I think they really stepped it up a gear. I think having Mercedes behind him spending a good $400 million now, I think it helps.
Doesn't it, Jeff?
Which is rumoured to be about the same as Red Bull. So
well, it'll be very interesting how that goes next year. They're going to miss Ross Brawn.
I think any team would miss Ross Brawn.
Can't believe he's going.
That was going to be my three-worder. What about Ross? It's all well and good having the success they've had this year. And I've said from the beginning of the year, the success Mercedes have had this year is unparalleled and no one expected it. I remember when Lewis came, go back through the archives, listeners, and find out and listen. And I remember saying on this pod, bad move, Lewis. You've made an absolute mistake there. What would have happened if he'd stayed at McLaren? Look at them. I mean, I don't think he'd have been pleased at all. So Lewis knew what was up. We didn't know. We judged. I doubted. But Lewis knew what was up. But yeah, what about Ross? What are they going to do?
What about Ross? What about Ross? Sabbatical and then probably a return, says Niki Lauda. I think he's expecting him to be back. Yeah. I think we all are.
There's rumours of like a role in the FIA, but I think he'd actually want to be involved in the team, I'd have thought.
Like following or McLaren.
John Todd's footsteps there, wouldn't he?
Well, Bernie's going to be going soon as well. Well, I don't know if you want to do that job, particularly.
That Bernie tipped Christian Horner.
We mentioned McLaren. What's up, McLaren? Where'd you go? There you go, there's a couple. I mean, that really is a shocking season, isn't it?
Totally. I mean, from 2012's campaign, which they really should have won the championship, although that's a whole different story, but to come from, probably one of their best years since Lewis won his championship with them in 08, to this, which is probably their worst season, probably since...
Gerhard Berger drove for them.
Possibly.
I spoke about Gerhard Berger because of his helmet. It wasn't anything to do with McLaren.
You're all about the Gerhard.
I love Gerhard. Yeah. Who doesn't love Gerhard? Come on now.
Maybe McLaren should Gerhard.
Hello.
Thanks. Shocking really. To take a car and come up with a new one like that.
Yeah, they tried a whole radical new design when they had a quick, probably towards the end of last season, probably did have the quickest car on the grid. Tried something completely different, just failed completely. I mean, I finished like nearly 200 points behind Lotus.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Two steps back. It's my three-word.
Like it.
Three-word review for McLaren there.
And it's going to be very interesting going forward because, of course, Sergio Perez is going to be... Well, we don't know where he's going to be, actually, do we? At the moment. I wonder if he'll be Force India. But... Jenson Button is going to have a rookie teammate next to him, Kevin Magnussen. It's a bit interesting, isn't it? Because Jenson didn't really get a grip of the car this year, and you know, wasn't quite the same effervescent Jenson we used to.
And a sad Jenson makes me sad. Have you realised that Jenson's one of those characters that you want to identify with him, you want to be with him, and you want him to do well because he seems like such a nice guy. He gets involved in Movember, he's always laughing and joking, he's just like, he's just an average, everyday, wonderful guy. And when he's sad, I'm sad. I'm not sad if people like Alonso are sad, I just think, come on, man up, you're the best driver on the track, sort yourself out. But when Jensen's sad, I'm legitimately sad. So I really hope that he's happier next year because I don't want to be sad watching Formula One anymore.
Well, McLaren were well down the standings. Ferrari weren't as badly off, but they did come third in the Constructors' Championship. And it's going to be a bit... It's just didn't quite fire this year, did they, Carl? There was something missing, not just from them, but from Fernando as well, I thought.
Yeah, Bernie Eccleston came out this week and said he gave up sort of the second half of the season.
Nothing like keeping us talking about Formula One, Bernie.
But I mean, it seemed to struggle with qualifying. I mean, Alonso's race pace was always quite good, but that was no good when he was qualifying 7th, 8th, 9th.
He did still finish second in the championship, I suppose, which was probably relatively comfortable from the moment Kimi Raikkonen had back surgery.
it's quite surprising actually to see him there, because you sort of look over the season and think he struggled a bit, especially at the start of the season. Compared to last season, he got a bit of a lead.
I disagree with you there. I would say that if I think back, and I may be statistically wrong on this, and feel free to jump in, But if I think back, I think of the second half of the season as being where Alonso struggled. And I think at the beginning of the season was where he won his races and was particularly strong.
Yeah, did he win one? It was only one, which was Spain.
I think
he made a few mistakes in the first few races, which was...
Well, Malaysia was obviously a massive... I mean, that decision not to pit.
Don't get me started. Listen to the Malaysia pod, I was not happy.
I think
not
even
happy.
At the time, we expected that to come back. I mean, that could have changed the whole dynamic of the season, because had they have won that race and been, you know, in a better position as the season wore on, maybe they'd have shouted harder about the tyres, and you just don't know, do you? What ifs?
If wishes were fishes,
the world
would be an ocean.
There's your three word. Wishes were fishes. Okay, well, Fernando and Ferrari will be back to fight another day. Might be interesting with the fact that they're going to have Kimi as well. Is that the most exciting setup for next year?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised Kimi went there. I remember saying to you when we were doing the sports programme, you know, most drivers next year would want to be with a manufacturing team because of the changes, and the changes probably for only a season favour manufacturers' teams. So I'm not surprised he went there. But I think that's probably the strongest lineup, really, because... those two always finish strongly in the race. No matter what car they've got, they're always finished strongly, and they have done for the last couple of seasons, really. So I think that's the strongest lineup.
Is there any issue that they might not get on, or will they get on? Are we just building up?
I certainly think it's the most dynamic lineup. I think it's combustible.
Dynamite.
Yeah, I think it's combustible, definitely. And I look forward to it.
But does anybody get on with Kimi? Does he just...
Oh, I think...
Certainly not his race engineer. The guy on the radio gets told off left, right and centre.
I heard the team appreciated Kimi more than maybe some would have thought. So.
I just wonder, I think Alonso would be more worried about Kimi, and Kimi will be worried about what Fernando's doing. So Kimi will just get on. As I said before, Fernando Alonso hasn't got a great history of liking... decent second
successful teammates, so
be a very interesting first couple of races.
He's made a few comments this year about rumours about him after the Red Bull drive, so
good stuff. Alright then, well, it's probably a good time to talk about Lotus. Kimi in the end finished the season fifth, Mark Webber and Lewis Hamilton finishing above him after those two races he missed out on, and in truth it was quite a strange second half of the season for Kimi. Whereas the Lotus carried its pace, and obviously Romain Grosjean had an unbelievable second half to the year,
which makes you very happy.
Well, I'm just saying.
As a number one Romain fan,
I hope he has a car to be a challenger next year. I'm not sure Lotus are going to have as good a car next year. That would be my big question mark.
Yeah, I mean, we're just assuming, because I mean, next year is by no means going to be what we've had the last couple of seasons. I mean, we're assuming that Red Bull's going to do the usual and turn up with probably the best car. You know, we're assuming Ferrari might be a bit closer, we're assuming Mercedes might be as quick. You know, it's, who knows, you know, next season is going to be totally different.
It'll be real reliability issues as well, which should mix it up. Lotus have lost quite a lot of personnel that have been at Enstone for a long time. That's where my worry would come in, James Allison.
Yeah, I think he's the major one. I think he's going to be a major loss for him next year. Depends how much work he put into next year's car and what he set up next year before he left. But yeah, I think it's definitely going to affect him next year. And I think they lost a few people as well. Obviously, they haven't got the biggest budget until Maldonado turned up.
Well, I was going to say, we have to bring it up because we spent most of the year slagging off Pascal Maldonado. Next year, we're almost going to have to pin our colours to his efforts.
You might.
as an EDP F1 podcast backing Heffelbacked Lotus,
I'll take it.
Pastor Maldonado will be driving for them next year in place of Kimi Raikkonen alongside Romain Grosjean, who let's assume will be number one. Pastor's effectively keeping the team afloat with his money.
Yeah, Kyle and I were discussing this before you arrived. This is a short term ploy. There is no way. Anyone at an executive level in F1 can see Pastor Maldonado as a long-term solution to winning races and championships. That's just not going to happen. And that has to be your goal If you're, even if you're Marussia or Caterham, your goal is to win a race eventually. It has to be, or else you're in the wrong sport.
Yeah, but what about as a number two driver collecting the points for the constructors?
No, see, I don't see it, because look at his attitude, the way he performs.
Right.
If he's not performing, if the car's not performing, if he feels he's been slighted by the team, slighted by someone on the track, and he's not getting enough pats on the head, he just seems to not care.
I have to say,
and he is infuriating to watch when he does that.
I thought his antics with Williams at the end, sort of one of the things he'd accuse them of, would make it very difficult for a team to take him on.
It's all about the money, Michael.
But clearly there is we're talking a huge amount of money that must be behind him. I mean, it's also interesting that he had a far worse season than Valtteri Bottas, who was his rookie teammate.
Yeah. Is it Maldonado's third?
Third,
compared to a rookie. You got 1 point for Maldonado, 4 points for Bottas. So, I don't think even Lotus came out and said Hülkenberg was their number one choice. And we're kind of only getting Maldonado because of his money. And they pretty much came out and said it. So,
there was a bigger story to this.
Well,
if I may, the biggest story, I'm going to have to say it because I've been going on about this for years. But, you know, I think it was, 2009, something like that, when we had a few more manufacturers around, something like that. And when they left, you had Bernie Eccleston, Max Mosley at the time, saying, well, we're not really bothered. You know, we've got tons of other private racing teams queuing up to come onto the grid. And I was the one who said, no, you need your manufacturers, because, you know, that's what keeps your proper talent coming through. You have too many private race teams and they rely on drivers with money to come to the team to keep them afloat. And what we've had the last 3 or 4 years, we've had so many drivers change in these private race teams, it's difficult to keep up and remember who's who, who's driving where. And, you know, you can get halfway through a season and they can disappear and someone else come in because they've got more money and they need it. And that's not really getting the right talent through, it's just getting someone because he's got more money than the last person.
Absolutely.
And I just go back to the same point and say, well, what did they expect? You know, when manufacturers disappeared, I mean, we're down to probably three manufacturers. I mean, I suppose arguably McLaren is a manufacturer now, but, you know, really we're down to sort of Ferrari and Mercedes as the two main ones, and that's really it, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Whereas, as you say, go back to 2009, you had BMW,
Toyota,
and the Toyota. Yeah, I mean, there were a lot more manufacturers.
Well,
Renault, of course. Yeah.
Renault were in charge at Enstone, and they have. I mean, this quantum money is presumably disappeared into some of the space-time continuum or something.
Yeah, sorry, back to Maldonado. So you could argue he deserved his seat because he was GP2 champion, but I think he's had his time now.
Oh, he hasn't done enough to remain.
He deserved his drive probably the first time, but now it's time to move on.
Well, we'll see how Lotus go through that. I mean, but, you know, a very good season for them. That's probably the big thing. But they didn't get the man they wanted, who, as was confirmed today, will be back at Force India. Now, did we all snigger when Eddie Jordan said Nico Hülkenberg will go back to Force India? And we also went, oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't.
Is because he was the one who said Lewis Hamilton would be going to Mercedes, and he was absolutely right, and I remember that, so I thought he's probably right again.
Never doubt Eddie Jordan.
I think that's the lesson. Eddie knows his stuff. And the thing is, who's telling Eddie Jordan this stuff? Because surely at one point someone's going to go, no, I'm not going to tell Eddie that, he's going to blab. No, Eddie just goes out and gets these people blind drunk and goes, he's an Irishman, he'll probably hold his drink. And, you know, he gets these people absolutely ruined, and I think they just give up trade secrets, and Eddie sits on them like an egg until they hatch, and he can suddenly just go, well, no, he's not going to Lotus, he's going to Force India, isn't he?
Keeps him employed.
That's indeed. Exactly
very
it.
Very much so.
Eddie knows what side of the bread is buttered.
He does
friend.
Indeed. I wonder, yeah. People probably still tell people these things if, and they're not. I mean, as you say, they will have told Eddie, expecting it to come out at some point, I would have thought. Unless he knows a whole wealth of stuff that's never come to pass. Who knows? Force India were pretty disappointing this year. We sort of always wanted them to step up, and maybe, I suppose, the car was pretty disappointing, and the two drivers more so.
Force India started off quite well.
The tyre change apparently killed them. That's what they would say.
And Suttle started off astoundingly. Everyone was kind of like going, wow, he's been out for a year, and now look at him, he's come back, he hasn't missed a beat, he's brilliant. Not so much.
And they did beat Sauber in the Constructors.
Well, that's true.
I did not see that coming. I genuinely did not see that, because from the performance of Force India, and in all honesty, I don't think it's been necessarily the performance of the team, as in performance of the ability of the car and the drivers on track, but I just what sticks out in my mind is that the management team seems to have made some questionable calls with pit stops and tyre choices and setup and things like that. It always just seems to be that actually the talent is there and the speed is there, but you know, it just always seems to a silly mistake here or a foolish pit stop error there or what have you. And poor qualifying has really killed Force India this year as well.
Yeah, well, they were chasing McLaren until quite late. They didn't quite manage it in the end.
It was only just about halfway through the season, wasn't it? McLaren actually
thought that. Yeah. Well, certainly not the people at Woking.
Well, I think we would have liked to, because we've said before, Force India are ready to take that step forward.
Yeah.
So we envisioned Force India chasing McLaren for podiums, not for Q3. You know, it wasn't that kind of thing. So, but yeah, you're quite right. You know, you don't see it happening that far down the grid, and you still see a gulf between those teams. You would expect it.
So Nico Hülkenberg is confirmed. Who do we expect will be sitting next to him next year?
Mr. Perez.
Eddie Jordan said
no. I think
Perez. Steve's going against Eddie Jordan.
Yeah. I think Perez will go back to Sauber.
Okay.
I think he will go back there. I think the rest, I think, might hang on to it. I think it depends on how much money he's got behind us.
Yeah. There's always a way.
Another story, but
yeah. Well, he'd need to do more than he's managed this year, would you?
It's not been a great season for him. I mean, he started off quite well in his Force India career, you know, or Formula One career. He seems to have gone off the ball this season. I don't know. I think a lot of the best sort of midfield drivers, if you like, have been picked or earmarked. So I think he could end up just hanging on. You know, I think if he has another season like this season next year, I should think that would be him a gone.
Yeah. But I suppose he hasn't. It's like he hasn't progressed. But in the first year, there's all this novelty and hope for that the potential will breed improvement, and then when the results sort of stay as they are, that's kind of it, really, isn't it? We'll see who turns up there. Sauber, obviously, the competition. They were okay, I suppose.
Better in the second half of the season.
They got better, didn't they?
They got better, but that was down to Nico Hülkenberg's ability to drive. Gutierrez, though.
I was surprised. He impressed me more than I was expecting. And I think he was top.
And I think he did it all under the radar as well. That was the thing.
He was top rookie, wasn't he, as well? So, although admittedly, that's only him and Bottas pretty much, and then no one else was going to score a point.
I don't know about Gutierrez. I don't really like him in GP2. He's still a long way off of Hülkenberg this year. I mean, Hülkenberg is good.
Gutierrez is very young as well, isn't he?
He deserves another year, but yeah, I think he's a big year next year, because I'm not convinced yet.
Big year. Maybe an all-Mexican Sauber lineup. Hey. Yeah. That'd be exciting.
They could turn that into some good sponsorship money, couldn't they?
Toro Rosso.
Flashes of occasional race, they look quite good, but they're missing for quite a lot of the year. And really, it's just between the point of their season was to see who got the second Red Bull driver, and the driver's choice.
And that was over sort of the summer. I mean, Daniel Ricciardo, he finished 14th in the end. I mean, he was probably much better than Jean-Éric Vergne over the course of the season, I think it's probably fair to say.
I'd say that's fair.
I think it's qualifying. I think Red Bull likes it's much better qualifying than Jean-Éric Vergne. So,
does
that much difference between them, but yeah.
He does get the best radio shout out of the year as well, doesn't he, Ricardo? Surely, from Jenson Button when he first made it into the top 10. Was that this year? You can cut it if it's not.
Possibly.
What did he say? Jensen was pulling in, he's just like, who's in the top 10? He was like, so and so, and Ricardo. Jensen was like, Ricardo? Wow. Was that this year?
Oh, yeah, no, that was this year.
That was this year.
I remember that, actually. Yeah.
So he got a good shout out from JB because he's obviously surprised people with his ability to get into the top 10 in Q3.
Is he going to be good in a Red Bull seat?
I think he'll be exactly what Red Bull need him to be.
Well, like Mark Webber.
Yeah. No, I don't think he'll be as fast as Mark Webber. I don't think he'll challenge. And that's the key. I don't think he'll make any noise about having to not bad for a number two driver, you know, that kind of quote, because he is a number two driver. He's been brought in as a number two driver.
Of course, yeah.
Because, Webber was at Red Bull before Vettel came in. Vettel started at BMW, I think, throwing that out there.
Very briefly, and then went to Toro.
With Toro Rosso.
Rosso, and then.
Well, Ricciardo, as I always call him, is coming from a number two team. So I suppose it'll suit him to be a number two driver.
Hey, he's just going to be happy to be getting in top fours, top fives, surely.
And some more money.
That'll play into it a little bit, Steve. Yeah.
That will help. Ninth in the Constructors' Championship, Williams. 5 points all season.
Dreadful.
Awful. Shocking.
And there you go, that's your three-word season review right there.
I think that will do it. Valtteri Bottas may be showing signs that he's got something, but again, he's young, and there's an element of the car in how difficult his season was.
Yeah, the car was dreadful, so it's hard for him to shine, but it's a great score. Maldonado, he's been there for years.
As much as it pains me to say, he needs to remind us.
Yeah, I think it's a really good year for Bottas. It's a reputation. I think it's a big year next year, obviously alongside Massa.
Can Felipe Massa help them not be rubbish?
Depends on how much money you can bring in. They just need them. There's a lack of funds there at Williams. I mean, they were obviously very successful in the early 90s or mid 90s, but it's just a lack of money, isn't it? You know, I mean, I've read all kinds of stories in the last 18 months, 2 years of Williams about them being in debt, and they floated themselves on the stock market and all this sort of stuff, and it's just typical modern day Formula One has left them behind, really, haven't they? You know, from what was a successful race team in the mid 90s to a team that I think most people just tend to forget about
and just wish they were better.
They haven't been the same since they changed their livery to red. Remember that year that they did that? They changed it to red and they had that robot bird on the side. Yeah. I think that was when tobacco advertising was still allowed. And I think they changed to a different tobacco sponsor from Rothmans. And they went to red, and I just remember thinking, that's not Williams. And they've been rubbish ever since.
Is there an argument with Williams and McLaren that there's so much other things they're trying to do and to get money from that it just takes the focus away? I suppose McLaren is a difficult one because it's, we're judging it on one season, but whether their attentions get distracted, and they're obviously trying to increase revenue and things like that.
So they're trying to do something to race, trying
to survive, I suppose, which might well be the case again next year. Leaves us with the two new teams, or young teams. Marussia coming 10th.
Big
news for them, although I think they were trying to downplay it. Jules Bianchi finished 19th, so he finished above all the other blokes. Jules Bianchi was 19th. I assume him and Max Chilton will still be there next year.
Max is quite confident.
He seems to think so. Max finished every race.
Exactly.
Yes, he did.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Brilliant for him.
Score any points?
No, but neither team has ever.
This was a smashing up front wins.
But still, I mean, come on, it shows brilliant reliability and it shows that he's consistent. But if you're consistent but not fast, you're just Nick Heidfeld. And no one cares about Nick Heidfeld. All right?
Next quick Nick. There you go. Max Chilton. Next quick Nick.
I'm not unimpressed with Max Chilton. I think he's done very well. I don't think he's shown the speed to remain a consistent driver in Formula 1. I think unless...
Give him another year.
I would give him another year. Happily give him another year. However, he needs to do more to get himself in a position where a mid-level team will think he might be worth a shot, even if it's as a test driver, because as we've seen this year, you know, back surgeries and things like that, people can jump into cars and come in if necessary. So I think he needs to do more I don't think finishing every race is something that you'd put on your CV when you're putting into a mid-level team. Hey, Force India, I finished every race. Force India can't even put out a car that will finish every race, so that's irrelevant. But
Jules Bianchi was much hailed when he got the drive, which was a pretty short notice at the start of the year, and he basically, I think it was him who picked up the result that gave Marussia their 10th place. Didn't really hear a lot of him after that. Is he still someone that excites us? Is a lot sort of hoped of him?
I think Ferrari is still keeping a key on him. I think Marussia got Ferrari engines next year, so obviously there's a link of thought there. I mean, sort of, Max is no mug, and Bianchi was a lot quicker than him. So is Bianchi the next big star? And Max is just an average driver, we don't know. So I think, for his reputation, I think it's a good year for Bianchi. I'm surprised in a way he didn't get a better drive, because maybe like a Force India he nearly joined last year. I think he's got a long career in F1 ahead of him, in my opinion, but
we'll wait and see.
He's also very quiet as well, isn't he? So he's
That's true. He needs to work on his PR. You have to if you're a Formula 1 driver. So that leaves Caterham, our very own Caterham from down the road.
Please move on.
We didn't see them a lot, did we?
That's my three words. Please move on.
End? Pull the plug?
Yeah. Well, no, just from this conversation. There's not a lot to say. I mean, yeah, they're local. We give them a lot. We do. The thing is, I have a real soft spot for Caterham. Less of a soft spot since Hakey went to Lotus. because Hakey was really, the draw for me. but it's not... They just don't have enough resource to be competitive. And that's what's upsetting.
It's hard to think that next year will help them out either, is it really?
I was expecting more from Charles Peak this year.
I think everyone was.
Yeah.
You sound like Dave Tillier.
Yeah. His next big thing.
He's just going to drift out of F1 now.
I think he probably will. Yeah. Guido may well carry on. Marcus Ericsson is the guy who might come in. GP2 man and a regular to Norfolk, having driven for both iSport and Supernova, I think, in GP2 over the years. So we'll see how he gets on. If he gets the nod, I guess it'll be whoever brings the most budget. Heikki Kovalainen, he did his two races. Do you think we'll see him again in Formula 1, Ped?
I hope. I like to think so, but then he could well go the way of Kimi Kobayashi.
He is hoping Heikki.
See you soon, ?
Okay, we haven't really planned this, so I'm just going to hit you with it all. We'll have some awards of the year. Best race, we're saying Malaysia, aren't we, pretty much? With highly commended to Silverstone.
I also liked Canada, but I always like Canada.
Yeah, always like Canada. If I did a best race, best driver and best team, are we going to get the obvious?
Let's go most enjoyable.
Most enjoyable
best,
driver.
Best you can kind of rely on stats and wins and things like that. And obviously, it's quite obvious who the best team and the best driver was.
So most enjoyable driver, Pet?
I've said that now and I don't have an answer.
Nico Hülkenberg.
You think Hülkenberg?
Yeah.
You think?
Grosjean.
I'm going to say Roman. That's me.
That's a win.
That's a rarity for me as well. I will go Roman Grosjean on that one. I will also. He can barely win out over Lewis Hamilton. We discussed earlier Lewis's ability to drive a car that was, by all accounts, a bit of a dog last year. I think he's done really well. I would pit Grosjean. Yeah, over Lewis just ever so slightly.
Gents,
I'll go Rosberg.
Yeah.
I think he had a big year this year. A couple of wins. Monaco and Silverstone. Big wins for him. I think he had a good year this year. So, yeah, Rosberg's mine.
Push Lewis more than some people thought he would.
Yeah. I would go for something different. I would go with Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah.
It's just another solid season, really. I mean, it's probably a shame, really, he missed the last few races, because I think he would have got that third spot. It was just another solid season, really, from him, consistent as always and regularly appearing on the podium, and which is far further ahead than he started from qualifying. So yeah, I'd go with Kimi Raikkonen.
Okay, best radio message. There are a few of those. Kimi being sworn at by his engineer.
Lewis Hamilton.
Which one? Yeah,
exactly. There's many. I think he produced the most best ones. Yes. Maybe not the best.
He was
one,
more prolific. That's true. And we might not get that next season, he said to himself, hasn't he?
I think my favourite Lewis one was when he's Barcelona and they really struggle with the tyres. And they tell him to look after the tyres. And he said, I can't go any slower. I think you've been overtaken by Williams.
I actually say that my best radio message didn't come from a driver. It came from the race engineer that called Heikki Kovalainen and Kimi Räikkönen. That was golden. That was just absolutely great.
You can't take those back.
No, that moment is out there, my friend, and that is a cringe for the rest of your life because it was recorded.
So the radio messages mentioned that Malaysia were quite good, weren't they, between Christian Horner sort of.
Yeah. This is silly now, yes. Seb.
Yeah, being silly.
He's been told, Mark. Yeah. Imagine the amount of times they've been replayed over the rest of the season.
How about best pit crew?
Okay.
It's a bit of an obscure one. I can't think of it. Who was producing the quickest?
I think Red Bull.
Yeah.
When they get to something like 1.9
sub 2 second ridiculous. Yeah. That's inhuman.
That's ridiculous.
Do they steroid test pit crews?
Probably not.
I think they should. I think everyone involved in the sport should be subject to performance enhancing drugs because you can't do that.
Tests, not the drugs.
Well, yeah, performance enhancing. Yes. They could be subject to drugs. I don't know.
You say that, but I happen to know that through a friend of mine who works at the Red Bull factory.
Here we go.
That they have every employee there has endless of supply to Red Bull, but they're not allowed to take any home with them.
Okay.
So they can only drink it whilst at work.
Okay, so they could be drip-fed it all the way through the
weekend. Well, I was thinking that gives them more energy to do more work, because obviously they're at work. But if you take it home with you, then obviously you're not doing work when you're at home. That was my thinking.
Yeah. As it also explains maybe why Caterham came up with their own energy drink. They obviously all need these energy drinks just to keep them going.
Apparently, because they...
Yeah. Yeah. I think we stumbled onto something.
Yeah. Actually, we'll give a special, because we're doing pit crews, we'll give a special shout out to McLaren, who just don't get fazed when Lewis Hamilton pops in to say hello. Yeah, just pulls into his pit to say hey. They just don't even get fazed. Lewis turns up for a little chat and they just wave him through.
He's always allowed in, apparently.
That's he's always allowed back.
Yeah,
always
welcome. Saint Michael.
Okay, well, finally, just looking ahead to next year, a lot of changes on the cars. We don't know how they're going to look, but they're going to change. The height of the front nose is going to be different, the width of the front wing is going to be different. Obviously, we've got whole new powertrains that will be V6 engines with ERS instead of KERS, which I love, ERS. These cars are going to be ugly.
Apparently so. Droopy noses.
I've seen some drawings. They look.
I saw some drawings.
Horrific.
On the internet.
The better versions. They could. Yeah, teams can make them pretty ugly. Apparently.
You thought a couple of years ago they were ugly. This is going to be.
Well, the thing is we all said that when 2009 came in, we all said that they just look ugly, and now when we all look at before that, we look at the cars and go, oh my god, they used to look like that. I think it'll just be the same thing again. I think initially it'll be like, what do they look like? And then you get used to it, and then you'll look back and think, they look really dated.
I have to say, some of the cars used to, I thought looked lovely, like the Ferrari and what's the other one that looked nice?
Oh, the Ferrari looked pretty.
Yeah, they just had these big, high noses. Well, there you go. Best car. Their prettiest car.
You laughed at me when we had this discussion recently.
Ferrari,
Michael,
for me.
And I said, I think the best looking car on the grid.
Yeah. I remember your answer then,
was a Marussia.
Rubbish.
I think it looked gorgeous. I think the colour combination was nice. I think it had a really nice, tight, compact shape to it. Probably why it was crap. But I think it looked, to look at, I think it was very, very pretty car.
I thought McLaren.
You agree with him? What?
It wasn't even the best red car.
The thing is, you can't beat the silver and the red of the McLaren. That's always a classic paint.
But we're not talking about colours
no,
here.
No, I know,
we're
but
talking
it kind
about
of helps.
Overall shape and it was essence.
To be honest, it was a pretty car. McLaren do turn out pretty cars. Just not quick, it seems. All right, then.
Your worst helmet of the year? Is that quite
harsh? MJ. Goodness sake.
Yeah, you went on that, didn't you? You didn't like that
shocking.
Much at all, did you?
Shocking.
No. Did Seb bust out his little LEDs this year? I don't think he did.
I don't know any LEDs.
No, his wood effect was back in Texas, and that looks rubbish. I almost swore that. That was how angry it got me. I almost dropped it.
I would also argue that the fact that Lewis and Nico had very similar, had both had yellow helmets.
Yeah, it was a little bit difficult at times until you got used to it.
Yeah. Squad numbers for drivers? Apparently they want to keep their numbers, cool. I heard.
I like the idea of that. Yeah.
Apart from, does Seb just keep number one? I mean, what about the number one
Someone's
driver wearing
number one?
One,
aren't they?
I mean, it has to be your choice. I think in MotoGP, you think you choose. Because obviously they got quite their own numbers in a way. But if you can choose. If you win the championship, you can have number one, or you can keep your number.
Okay.
So you could have like any number. It could be like a shirt number in football.
Yeah.
1 to 99.
That'd be brilliant.
I'm not sure about this.
Why stop at 99? NASCAR don't.
7,000.
Up to huge numbers.
It works for MotoGP, like. Antonio Rossi's got his famous 46.
Lorenzo 99.
No.
What number? What if they introduced it right now? If they introduced it, go around the table. What number would you drive under? Go, Steve.
I think everyone's going to say number one, aren't they?
I'm not.
People the Damon Hill donut. The Damon Hill donut. Zero.
Mm. What car?
70.
70. Excellent. Why?
That's my race number when I was karting. So.
Karting number he's going to drop on his day. Michael?
I don't know, really. I propped 32 for some reason.
Why?
No particular reason.
No particular reason.
The 3-2-2-3 combination.
Okay.
It's a lot of good sportsmen have worn that. I'm thinking of Shaq and Jordan.
Shaq and Jordan and LeBron when he was at Cleveland. Now obviously wears 6 at the Heat. There you go.
I thought about that. Andrews.
I'd rock a 56.
Well, that's your number, isn't
it? That's my jersey number. You see it on my jacket right here. 56.
That always works on the podcast.
That's exactly right.
apart from Vettel, do we know the numbers of drivers this year? They've not.
Well, but it's all ranked in terms of the team. It's specific order. Well, maybe
they do, don't they? Because they put up at the bottom car number 4 investigated, causing an incident with car number 12.
That's
whatever,
sort of,
But now they've started putting the names in brackets because they've realised that no one knows who the car numbers are.
So you've got, car 46 or.
Love it. All right, well, let's wrap up. One word on the 2013 season to round up. Ped?
Enjoyable.
Okay. Steve?
Dull. Sorry, but it just was.
Love it.
You know.
Kyle?
Average.
Average. Might not be dominated. Job done. The prediction league. Has finished.
This is the money. This is what people are tuning in for, Michael.
This is why we're here. I can. I don't even know if I gave the results actually of what happened in Brazil. I can't remember. But if not, let me just say that Ped, you said there'd be a Red Bull lockout on the grid for qualifying, an all Mercedes second row. You said a Vettel win, but I'm not going to predict that. A Button top 10 finish. And 3 different constructors on the podium.
I'm happy enough to get the Button top 10.
You've got your Button top 10, and you obviously would have had Vettel, but you.
I chose not to predict. I stand by that.
I said that Perez would outfinish Button, which didn't happen. Hülkenberg top 5, nope. Caterham wouldn't finish 10th in the Constructors' Championship by the end of it, which was probably a bit of a gimme. And I said Webber would win. Obviously, too much of a fairy tale in that. Carl, you said Maldonado would be out in Q1, which he was, and Massa would out-qualify Alonso, which he didn't. Grosjean and Hamilton on the podium, neither of those two, and Hülkenberg top 6, which didn't happen either. And DT said that Vettel would be on pole and he would win. He got those. Grosjean, Hamilton podium, he also said Massa top 6, Bottas top 10, Hülkenberg top 5, nil points. But he did pick up a few. The final results then, the winner of this year's prediction league and taking Kyle's crown. The Oracle is no more. It's now sidekick, Perry Hamilton.
Yes.
Out and away in terms of kudos points and a 30% success rate.
It's just under a third of the predictions I made were accurate.
It would only have been enough for fourth last year, but it was enough to win it this year.
I don't mind that the level of competition has dropped. It just makes me look better.
That's obviously all our fault. I finished second, which was a noble achievement and an improvement on last year. DT came home third. Kyle came home.
What has happened to the Oracle?
The Oracle.
What has happened?
It's like McLaren, really. Just a little
such
bit.
A drop off.
He'll be back next year. We know how Kyle runs.
I finished below John Luton last year.
You did.
John Luton's last.
Poor John, he only had a few goes, but he did finish bottom behind Jack Phillips. On for your also-rans, Steve, you'll have the pleasure of this next year. You have to bring your prediction hat. We're not very good, so you should be alright.
I'm alright.
Yeah,
you talk for yourself when you say you're not very good.
You win our eternal gratitude, I think that's safe to say. Gentlemen, I think we're done for the season.
See you in March.
It is over. Yeah, we'll be back in the spring, maybe late winter. Testing will be early. Testing is at the end of January this year, so
next month.
Oh my god. That is unbelievable. It is next month.
Are we going to do any sort of, are we going to have any kind of special podcast outings that we might be able to report back to the noble constant listener?
As in, well,
I've no idea.
As in, we might go and all do our racing licenses.
We might go do some karting.
I might
go watch some kind of racing
stuff. I might finally do the video of our karting trip.
I really enjoyed that.
Well, I'll get that out during this. It'll be like a season review video over the winter. So keep an eye on the usual channels at EDPF1 on Twitter and facebook.com/EDPF1 on Facebook, obviously. Duh. We are on Twitter mostly. Steve hasn't joined the ranks yet, but I wonder a few pods and he might be on board. But Ped, you are?
At PedHD56. 5-6 people. Get tweeting me. I'm bored of not having any F1 tweets. Get it out there. Come on.
Kyle?
At Kcumbers.
And I'm at Michael J. Bailey, as usual. There you go then. Enjoy the rest of your year, guys. And we'll be back when the 2014 testing begins and all those engines start blowing up. Hopefully that alone will make it a slightly more interesting Formula One season in 2014. Until then, thank you all for all your comments, contributions over the season. We'll be back next year. Bye-bye.